Yes, here we are again, Rick.
Yeah, buddy. Another episode, another great guest. Super excited for this one.
Yeah. Wherever you are, guys, thank you for making this part of your day and joining us here at On the Range Podcast with Warhawk Tactical and Kelly Defense. We got a guest today, like Rick said, and super excited about it. Why don't you go ahead and bring it in, buddy?
Yeah, man. So today's guest is my friend Aaron Quinn. He is the CEO of Cobalt Kinetics. And I got to tell you this, man, these guys are doing phenomenal stuff in the AR space. So you see a lot of companies out there just kind of status quo, hey, just putting rifles out, but they're never doing anything to go, what can I do? And the classic On the Range podcast, 1% better every single day. Dude, you're seeing it with Cobalt, right? And this is the thing that impresses me with this company is they're always striving. How do we get 1% better, 1% better, 1% better? So
yeah, man.
Yeah, without further ado, man, let's go ahead and bring Aaron in.
There he is.
Hey, yeah, guys. Buddy.
Hey, man, how you doing, Aaron?
Doing all right.
Love the enthusiasm. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you taking your time. We know you're busy. You know, being the CEO of a huge company. And I get it. You're working all the time. And, you know, we've talked about it pre-production. We're the least paid, least appreciated. But you're the ones that's keeping it going, man. And everything I've heard from Rick has just been phenomenal when it comes to what you guys are doing over there at Cobalt.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, this is me excited. I've been told I have an emotional range of, like, scale of 1 to 10 between 4 and 6. So this is me ecstatic. Super stoked to be here.
Not a bad place to be at. You know, sometimes when you're super over the top or super way down low, you know, causes dramas. But no, dude, it's all good. So, Aaron, let's do this. Just kind of give people a quick background about you just because, you know, I'm sure with you kind of getting out on the podcast streams and kind of getting your message out there, but just kind of go, you know, a little bit, hey, what'd you do before Cobalt? Obviously picking up Cobalt and kind of what you guys are doing, and we'll dig deeper in as the show goes.
Right on. Yeah. So I don't come from the firearms industry. I don't come from military law enforcement background. I spent the last 10 years previous to Cobalt in the pharmaceutical space on the consulting side for most of the time, but then the last couple years in the wholesale distribution side. Got sick and tired of pharma. It's a depressing world. And a lot of government regulation, not that firearms is any different that way, but at least, you know, we're around something that brings passion in and you can have fun with. So came into Cobalt right in the middle of COVID, end of May 2020. And it was, you know, I tell this story all the time, but a friend called and said, you know, Cobalt Kinetics is selling a Connex box. They want $3,500 for it. It's got Gallotech inside. It's got gun racks, and it would look good out at your property. We have a range out here. So went over there. It was full of guns. Thought, man, that's the, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the way the Cobalts look, but, you know, I can't get guns right now. So asked if any of them were for sale. They said they're all for sale. And made him an offer. 9 days later, I was out of pharmaceuticals.
Nice.
Wow. Now, was the interest in firearms always there? Because that's a pretty big leap from, you know, pretty big pivot from pharmaceuticals to firearms.
I think drugs and guns have more of a correlation than most people think.
Touche.
Yeah. No, I
Fast and Furious maybe.
So,
oh yeah,
I have a lifelong passion and love for firearms. Really, any you know, weapons. Grew up loving martial arts. You know, even in high school when it was more of a nerdy thing to do. I look, at my core, I'm just a nerd, and I'm a nerd that loves to study and learn. And I like science a lot. I like data. And so that mixed with guns, guns to me, I call it functional art. I'm not a big fan of painting. Maybe it's because I suck at it, but not a fan there. But like, you come into my office and I've got lots of guns on the wall, and I don't just like ARs either. I like older guns. Guns tell history, and our history is full of war and conflict from the beginning. So I think we as a, human beings, as much as we don't like the need to have them sometimes, and we don't like conflict and war as a whole, I think it's something that, at our core, it's, we all have a drive, or at least a draw to them. Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite gun then? If you want to say modern day, historic, whatever, if you had to pick one.
You know what? Like, that's the beauty of life, is I don't have to pick one.
I'm going to pick them all.
Yeah. I mean, cause like I've got a Uberti 1873 that, I've worked on. It's just one of the coolest guns to shoot, and, throw a downloaded 357 Magnum into it, or 38 Special, and it's got a short stroke kit on it that's just been like, it's like glass. It's the coolest gun to shoot. I'd probably a 1911, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't shoot them often, and I don't, I think there's better options for concealed carry whatever. But I'm a huge John Moses Browning fan, and I think I've got more 1911s than anything else.
Mm. Yeah, it's an iconic firearm, right? And
oh yeah,
you got to think, really, 60s and 70s was kind of an evolutionary pivot in the firearms industry when we started accessorizing the 1911s. And I mean, you look at kind of what people are doing with Glocks today. We're doing that back to 1911s, back in the day. So yeah, I would have to agree with you. That is probably an iconic firearm for most, kind of seeing, the polymers kind of take over with the modern day guys. But yeah, 1911, a good shooting 1911, man, you cannot beat that thing.
No.
I mean, it is.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the 60s and 70s, and for the longest time, 1911 was the sidearm carried through several wars, and then it was kind of looked at like the redheaded stepchild, and you get the it's not accurate, it's not this, it's not that, and you got all of these parts in there, and then you start in the late 70s, later 70s, 80s, things started happening to the 1911, and it started being looked at and improved upon. And so, you get into the 90s, 2000s, and now, and you see 1911s that just, they perform really well, and they perform like they make the traditional gun even that much better. I kind of take that same approach with Cobalt, and a gun that's, had its ups and downs and misconceptions and, like true issues, and we looked at it and said, how can we make it incrementally better?
Yeah, and that's the thing that really impressed me with you guys. So you kind of got, you brought it up before, you inherited Cobalt, or bought it, but I'll just say inherit for lack of better terms, and kind of the designs and things they were doing with the current AR platform. To me, it was more of a flashier, showier side. And, what we've seen, just my interactions with you, is you looking to try to take this 180 out from kind of what the old Cobalt was, get that kind of rebranding going on, and go, hey, we are looking to build quality rifles. And the key part is, I don't know of any other company out there, Aaron, that strives to go, how can we, you know, because we talk about it all the time, 1% better every single day. You guys are striving. How can I make this platform just a little better? Hey, man, maybe if I tweak this pin here, do this. I mean, I know that we've chatted all kinds of hours, you know, as far as the platform goes and stuff like that. And yeah, the beauty is you're very much receptive to feedback. And you sit there and go, yeah, man, makes sense. Do this, change that. What's kind of your, you know, your driving factor, just so the viewers, listeners are tracking with that, you know, I guess your pursuit of excellence when it comes to this rifle?
That's a good question. And in buying Cobalt, I obviously, like, nothing about the old platform, the way that it looked, the way that I shouldn't say nothing. So much of the old platform, the length of it, the way that it looked, the way that it felt in my hands, the features on it, I didn't care for any of that. And I didn't find a lot of it to be relevant to what I wanted to build in a rifle. But I do think from a cultural standpoint, from a branding standpoint, and from a justification, I had to choose what legacy I wanted to continue on with Cobalt. And it wasn't even their legacy at the time, but it, you know, original Cobalt came about in 2014. And you know, competition world, the three gun world was hot and heavy. It was really big at the time. Billet ARs were an up and coming and bigger thing. And so I described Cobalt as meeting the demands of the market. And that was the legacy kind of I chose to carry on. And so with that, you know, we're past, you know, billet isn't necessarily going away. I think it's a lot more accepted these days. But it can be improved upon on what is needed, what is meant out of using that. I think the competition world, it's taken some turns, it's taken some deviations, and you know, splintered a little bit with things like the tactical games, Patriot games, two gun, three gun, USPSA, et cetera. Like, there's just all kinds of different factions out there based on what people want. So what I felt was needed was, and what the market demanded was something different, but something that added value that wasn't crazy off the charts. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the motivation behind where we took things from the beginning.
What was the first big change that you initiated and actually took to production?
I mean, it was essentially our Gen 1 platform as a whole. There are a couple things that, I mean, one major thing was the upper to handguard fitment. And that, you know, I had just come, it was end of May 2020. So I had just come from SHOT Show 2020. And there was a lot more talk about handguards and the way that, like, the strength of a handguard to the upper. And that was like, I kept hearing that over and over and over. So when I got in, I started looking at it going, okay, that's important to people right now. But I feel like it's just the same type Band-Aid or the same type product that's going on, every gun. And, you know, to some degree, without changing the upper, you don't have a choice. You've got, you know, half to three quarters of an inch of thread sticking out the front of an M4 receiver, and you don't have much option. But I felt like that was the place that we could kind of put our mark down and change it to something, you know, we felt was a little bit better. And that's really where we started. So for those that don't know what that is right here, this is our upper, and it's got the threads right here. They're inverted, so they're not exposed. The barrel does not sit on a thread runout, so, you know, we don't have high spots on that. I should have prepped this a little bit better. Sorry, it's a little bit longer.
No, it's all good.
So it brings, I mean, it's kind of a good point. It's a little bit of an inconvenience. It takes an extra like 25 seconds, but I feel like what you get out of it's a little bit better. So if you, you know, camera angle and stuff, I don't know if that's, you can see that really, but there's a flat surface at the bottom, and that's just a milled surface that doesn't have any thread engagement on it. So again, we don't have to lap our receivers to get the right fitment every time. And it's got the timing slots that are needed. And so barrel goes down, it's got 2 and 2.7 inches of thread. This jam nut that goes over the top is made of 7075 aluminum. To me, that was important. Most of the time when the barrel's connected, it's connected with a piece of steel. And I did not want the thread engagement and the activity that goes on in this area to be affected by competing materials. So it is the same material as that mates up. When this goes on and is torqued down appropriately, the rigidity that you get out of the barrel is extremely, it's impressive. Like when you crank on a barrel at the end of the gun, it doesn't move like traditional guns. And the benefit out of that is, you know, less barrel whip. The barrel's not moving as much after a shot, so follow-up shots are quicker, more accurate, more quicker. I'll go with that one. Yeah, if you want to crank on that.
Not going anywhere.
No.
She's rock solid. Yeah.
And, you know, the bigger key there is that, you know, there's lots of great barrel manufacturers, but when – you know, you don't get the full benefit out of a barrel if the attachment and things that are going on with the gun are affecting that, not letting it get there. And, you know, another big thing that happens is when your barrel is attached to the same exact thing, or what attaches your barrel is attached to your handguard, they're slaved together. And so, you know, you put flex, you know, you're loading into a bipod, you're barricading, you're whatever, and you've got flex on that handguard, or you've got stuff mounted on the outside of it. Every time you flex that, you're flexing the barrel as well. And it, you know, 30 yards, you're not really going to see any effect, but as you get further and further out, it becomes massively effect, you know, on the effect of it. You know, PRS world sees it all the time. And our system is completely, like, the handguard is deslaved from the barrel. So when this goes on, and it's got a timing feature right there that mates in, when it goes on, it's connected to the receiver, not the barrel. And that just allows you to do a lot of things. Like, you know, because we make all of these things, you're not going to see a fat piece of Picatinny on either the handguard or the receiver itself. So when these are mated together, you can cross mount things all day long. You're not going to lose zero up here on like a laser or anything. The threads right here, there's 8 individual slots. They have a directional cant to them, so that as you tighten it down on the screw itself, it's going to suck back into the receiver. And that just makes sure that it's aligning. You can take it on and off all day long, and you're gonna find that spot every time.
So Aaron, I got to ask you this, brother, right? Because you're speaking super highly technical on stuff. Are you an engineer by trade? Are you just a gun guy that super studied stuff? I mean, because most people aren't going to talk about opposing materials, right? People aren't going to talk about, hey, I'm torquing this one this way, this one that way, you know, to maintain my zero. Can you expound on that a little bit?
On if I'm an engineer? I'm not an engineer. I'm an uneducated just dork. Like I think differently than a lot of people. I suffer from OCD and ADD. And so I've got like a competition going on in my head all the time. And it keeps me like constantly moving. I've never taken a vacation. If I'm not working, I feel like I'm not being productive. And so I'm constantly tinkering. I'm constantly looking at things, just trying to always stay motivated. But at the same time, the OCD side of me says I've got to justify and have a reason for it. And so everything that I look and study, I'm like, okay, if I solve this, how is X, you know, how is this going to be affected? And then, so it kind of leads me down a rabbit hole every decision I make, but You know, I take into account a lot of things, and we find things prior to, you know, making a mistake. Not that we don't make mistakes, but, you know.
No, but I mean, you brought up a great point. It's studying, right? So it's, you're in this industry now, and I mean, just, hey, what material is going to work the best? What's going to cause us potentially problems down the road? I mean, looking at all that, I mean, to me, that's huge, because I don't hear any other company saying that. You know, it's like, hey, buy our rifle, right? There's no, to me, if you give the consumer the why is Cobalt ahead of everyone else? You know, what are you guys doing? To me, that's huge, is just a little bit of explanation. Hey, this is what we're doing. This is how we came to here. And, you know, let the consumer sit there and go, yeah, man, go give this thing a run and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies, because I do feel like a lot of places, they take into account a lot of things, and they've got engineers, they've got salespeople, they've got all of these people that, you know, some of them care, some of them don't, and they just want to get a product out. But I think the bigger thing is people are afraid to educate people in our community. I think it hurts us. At the end of the day, this is about the Second Amendment. It's about our rights and our access to use platforms. And I'd rather someone be overeducated and make a decision based off of their understanding of a weapon, and that they're either going to use for, you know, most of the time sporting, but that's something that they can use to defend themselves, their families, someone else. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a product that can and is going to be used, potentially used to save, take a life. And I think there's a seriousness there. And if you want the education, it should be available to you.
No, 100%. And is all that stuff on the website?
The website's undergoing some reconstruction. With some of the new products that have come out, the buffer system and the SPR line, there's that's, you know, as much as I would love everything to be able to just go out and be done right when you know the timing, everything lines up, we've run into some back end things that have delayed some of that, and we just want to make sure that before we make any changes to it, that all of the changes are up to date and right. We're going to be doing some, we've neglected YouTube. That's a platform that's still available to us to put longer videos out and to educate people. Essentially, like, my day to day is a lot of studying and testing and trying things. But we're going to be putting some videos out around each component on the platform. I'm working right now on spring justifications, because, you know, you type into Google, what are the differences? You know, what spring should I run? What are the differences in AR-15 springs? And you'll get something that says, well, this spring or this spring from X will, you know, should be for this barrel length. But that's not super educational. Knowing what the spring rate is, knowing what the spring length, the spring load at rest, or that 6 3/4 inch load versus, you know, if you're running an A5 system, that 7.5 inch load versus a 3.5 or, you know, 2 3/4 inch load at the base. What does all of that actually mean? And how does it affect my rifle? How does that affect my rifle in conjunction with a buffer weight, and or different calibers, different loads in a caliber? And so there's just so many things that aren't available to people, and finding the best way to put the last 2 years into a watchable video, that's not my world. Because I'd just rather talk for 2 years, but like, those are some of the things we're working on right now. Mm-hmm.
But see, here's the thing, and Mark, I know I just cut you off, but I got to say this. I just got to throw kudos back to you, right? I don't hear that coming from anybody else in the industry. I don't hear anyone even addressing it. It's, hey, buy my Contraption X, just 'cause, right? So you just kind of expounding and hit some stuff. I know Mark's got something that I want to circle back with one other thing with you.
Yeah, I was just going to say the website, though, is up and running. They could go and buy a rifle from you right now, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Buy a blaster.
if you have any questions or if there's anything confusing in there, just reach out to us. You know, cobaltkinetics.com is it's up. You can email us, you can call us, our phone number's right up top. You know, some of the best ways to connect with us is over Instagram. And that's just at Cobalt Kinetics, all kind of one word, no periods, anything in there. Yeah, that the DMs are checked often, and we enjoy talking to people and answering questions. I do it more on my personal Instagram, which is just aaron.cobalt. But yeah, like I love talking and helping people out.
Yeah, when you look at the website, Aaron, I mean it's a well done website. You know,
yeah,
it'd be great
awesome
to see kind of what you're doing with you know, whenever you kind of do your maintenance, because I get it, man. You got to update these things and tweak these things and do all the other stuff. But, you know, you got to love when you sit right there and go, hey, man, build your blaster. There it is right there. Mark's got it up, you know.
Yeah.
And boom, you know.
I mean, the idea is to make it user-friendly and easy to navigate. We offer 5 different colors. We offer multiple muzzle devices, different configurations. And so being able to put that into a simple platform isn't as easy as you'd think. I mean, like you can see there, the lettering is even off on that one. So it's just minor tweaks that we've got to make and then expand stuff on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Website looks good, man.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, you know, you've kind of identified stuff, not a big deal. I mean, we all know as business owners, man, you're constantly tweaking, you know, either your product, your website, all that other stuff. But can you hit on just a couple things, and I'll double dip the RCB muzzle device. I know you guys are, you know, just kind of launched that. And then you hit on the, you know, kind of the recoil system, you know, circle back to that one. Well, because I think that's something that a lot of people aren't addressing.
Yeah. So the RCB, it stands for reduced concussion break. And, it's more of a hybrid comp. The idea was something that doesn't have as crazy amount of flashes as well. So the request that came in from someone was, I want something that, has flash like a flash hider, but compensates like a break and has more of a linear comp feel. And I'm sitting there going, okay, those are three completely different attributes. So right on, we'll get going. We'll work on that. The linear comp side of things, that's not in here. And that's a piece that, you know, it works better on shorter barrels. And there's other things out there that will probably help with that better. We'll have more stuff though coming out, but this one, it took a long time to figure out what worked. And if you look inside it, the geometry is very unique. You see the ports on the sides, and I'm saying that because it's just up on the screen. So it's got a series of channels and ports on it, and those ports are different from a lot of compensators because brakes, because of how high they come up on the sides and how low they go on the bottom, and that was important to us because, you know, most compensators have, you know, it's very linear. Everything blasts out to the sides. And what you typically find is, you know, as soft as a gun might feel, as flat or as like non-recoily as, you know, depending on who's saying what or how they say it, what people don't go further into is what is the muzzle doing? And so you might have something that feels like there's no recoil at all, and you know they've got directional bafflings in their brakes that, you know, kind of send stuff a little bit rearward, and so it holds that rifle a little bit more forward, doesn't kick as much into the rear. What happens is that, you know, and you can test this out with Red Dot, is where's the muzzle going after that shot? And you know, right-handed shooter, a lot of times that's going up and to the right and off of that target. So when we looked at this, we said, I don't care that there's recoil. You know, physics tells me there has to be recoil. Like, energy has to go somewhere. If the bullet's going this way, there's energy that has to be moved elsewhere. And so I don't care if it comes back. You know, I don't want it to slam into my shoulder and put me off. But I'm more focused and more concerned on what the muzzle is doing after that shot. And so being able to take those gases and move them not only to the sides, but also a little bit top and bottom, so that, you know, you're getting some compensation from this side and this side, so that your muzzle's not rising. That was important. Going further, you look at especially low light or no light shooting of muzzle devices out there, and you start to look at what the pattern is that's coming out of it, and you see that flash on the end. Anytime that you have a muzzle device that has gases going wonky ways or uneven ways, that's going to affect your accuracy. That's going to affect how the airflow around the projectile is moving, and you know that's going to affect where it goes. So it was also important that we kept everything super concentric and super even flowed. So you know, if you look under our device, you're going to have almost like it's going to look like a bow tie a little bit, but it's going to be super super even on both sides. Yeah, so maintaining accuracy, but you know, muzzle movement was key there.
And so how much muzzle?
Sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and it comes in a couple different platforms. So you've got like standard with no mount abilities, and then that comes in a 3-inch and a 2-inch. The 3-inch was designed to be used pinned and welded on a 13.7, and then we have a dead air key mount version, which goes on, you know, any chemo device, whether that be like a dead air Sandman, or you know, you get it and run it on any suppressor that has the 1.375 threading. So can you be used on that? We've got one coming out for OSS/HuxWorks. Mm-hmm. Shortly we'll have Silencer Co. And the idea being that you can have that muzzle device to fit whatever suppressor you have.
And then how's the muzzle flash actually with that?
It's good. I've got a picture, but it's got like it identifies other brand muzzle devices, and I don't really want to show that, but
as a general, you know, it's on par with everybody else. It's a little more, a little less, you know.
It's a lot better than a lot of flash hiders out there. And not the best at hiding flash. I mean, I think the Vortex flash hider does a phenomenal job, but it's got other downsides. So sure. As a hybrid goes, it's up there. Like I think it does the best as far as compensating. But it's probably on the better third of flash hiders out there.
Cool. And then you don't have to worry about. Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to say, did you see any? Go ahead if you want to finish on the compensator there. I got another question.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask. So when you get shooters to the left and right, they're not going to be yelling at you because you're eating the ball peen hammer to the face.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a break. So it's going to be loud. The reduction in the concussion, So the reduced concussion side, it's going to be about 40% of a reduction on how far, and that's only measured. It's super unscientific, but it's measured on like how close you can be to it, to where it hits you in the face. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay.
Now I was just going to ask, kind of on another topic, as beloved as the AR platform is, did you encounter any heavy resistance to anything that you did that you thought, wow, you know, this ain't going to work, or I'm not going to be able to sell this kind of a deal?
Heavy resistance in like in the market, or?
Yeah. In the market.
I think we're new enough. And Cobalt had a, you know, I didn't realize, so it was an asset purchase, I didn't purchase the company as it was rolling. Okay. It was already dead. And so I didn't have a diligence period where I could look at, accounts and kind of, you know, histories and things like that. So that was a shock, and it delayed a lot of things because, you know, half the people hated it, that you know, they had bad experiences, mm-hmm. and half of them loved them. Like I didn't know going into a gun shop if I would have to defend myself, or, you know, defend myself from a punch or a kiss. Like, it was a defensive position either way, but like, I did not know which way it was going to go. And so the bigger piece and the bigger hiccup we've had is the rebranding side of it. Cause those that didn't carry Cobalt before, you go in and talk to them and they think it's still the flashy, mm-hmm. heavy, bigger piece. And it's like, no, that's not what we do. And then they see it and they're like, okay, that's a little different. Well, why is it different? It just takes people shooting the guns to get them to go, okay, now that's different. Like that's really different. And that's the biggest key, is just getting someone to shoot it.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that one. 100%.
Any thought to ever just totally doing a redo on the brand, change the name and all that stuff? Or was it something that you just kind of ran with and it was working right away, where the name was already out there enough that it was worth keeping it?
Yeah, I think that's, man, that's yes, because, you know, in some ways that it would have been easier to just come up with a whole new brand and start from scratch. It would have been cheaper. But the challenge of it and the transformation, I'm a big believer in second chances. And, you know, I think if the world was more into second chances and forgetting the past, I think everything would be better. But the challenge of rebranding Cobalt into what it is today has been a really cool and rewarding ride. Seeing someone who said, you know, who looked at it and were like, I would have never bought a Cobalt before. I like what you guys are doing now. And then like having them shoot it and see like, well, this is unique. Is really rewarding. The way a Cobalt felt, the softness of the recoil, the quietness of the buffer system, and that general feel was something unique. And it was why I ended up making the offer that I did, because I ended up buying a gun that day, taking it out and shooting. I'm like, okay, there's so much of this I don't like, but I want to chase that feel, but I want to chase it in a different way. And so seeing people who loved Cobalt, had them, and then are shooting the new stuff and going, okay, I like this. And then seeing the people that were on the, I didn't like it, I would never have done it, but I don't mind this, and then shoot it and feel it and get that same result. That's a really cool feeling. Cool to be a part of.
Yeah.
But as far as Nate, like, we changed the logo, modernized it a little bit. The old logo was an end mill that, if you looked at it from like flat, straight on, that's what it looked like. Wanted to put that in motion a little bit, showing that, you know, we're moving the brand forward. And so that's where our logo is now. We did drop kinetics on a lot of what we did. So that's the old logo there. And I just have a sticker right here with the new one. So. So that's the new logo right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it.
But yeah, so we dropped kinetics, and so we do go by, you know, essentially Cobalt right now.
Okay.
Awesome.
I don't know. I think my screen wound up freezing again. Man, I tell you, sometimes that thing's, I'm like,
we need to get the engineers over at Cobalt to take a look at that.
Yeah, just.
It's like, hang out going, oh, what size is he on? So really? Froze half screen. I'll just stand over here. But yeah. Aaron, you were talking about the buffer system. You want to go into that a little bit? Because I think that's really a key moneymaker. You know, when you talk about the softness of the rifle.
Yeah, so the original Cobalt buffer system, it was that's a hard piece for me because it worked, and moving past that, the fear of it not working, even though like it was incredibly complicated and not super user friendly, that was a huge risk, and it took a long time working on it. We started working on it in May of 2021, and we just launched it at the end of May this year. But the previous buffer system had a polyurethane sleeve that went down the buffer tube, and then a little bit wider of a spring actually that went in and was made of Delrin. It was super quiet. It had a disc with a Viton, which is like a really cool rubber at the ball at the bottom as the dampener. And then a feature on the cap that helped align and maintain alignment with a bolt carrier in it. The problem is that Delrin cap was front loaded so that you could change the weights. And if you didn't take it out right, or the tolerance got a little bit loose, the cap would pop off. And you know, if you weren't catching it, you'd have weights going everywhere. And then you couldn't change it out. So it was very complicated, but, I started working in May of last year with Voltor Weapon Systems. I really like their A5 system. And for those that aren't familiar with an A5, it's 3/4 of an inch longer than a standard carbine buffer. And, might have one here. Hold on a second.
Yeah. We love the show and tell, man.
Okay, so I don't have a standard A5 here, but so it's got a little spring in the bottom, and that spring helps to re-engage the lugs and drive that bolt carrier group forward a little bit back into battery. It's really effective, and the differences you can see with them in like full auto is extremely apparent. So we always go way above and beyond, and then we come back to the most simple. And so when you look at, this is our new buffer. When you look at this and you're like, oh, it looks very similar to an A5, it does. And it is. And we ended up just adding this little feature on top, which is, it's the angles on it are different. And that's what took the longest amount of time, was figuring out what angles work the best. And so when you put this up to, and it's an anti-tilt and a preload feature. So, you know, when I say anti-tilt, there's some people in the AR world that are like, oh, it's a DI gun, it's not a piston, so you don't have carrier tilt. That's, you know, the ding tilt is not what we're talking about. When we talk about tilt and the anti-tilt feature, it's the flat of the carrier and the flat of the buffer not lining up and essentially doing like this down the back of a buffer tube, which causes recoil. And so having this line up and sitting inside a little bit, make sure that these stay linear as they go back, while maintaining a bit of tolerance on this back end, so that, you know, if your tube's not exactly straight, or it's straight but canted a little bit in comparison to how it's screwed into the lower, it's got the tolerance to move a little bit there. But then you can see that I can move this a little bit, and so it's not sitting super flush, and that little bit there is the preload that takes it, you know, completely off of the retaining pin, and allows for, as the bolt itself and the lugs disengage, it's more of a push instead of a slap. Like, you're not getting that slap into it. These are minor things. You know, when you talk about the 1%, like 1% can have a massive effect overall, especially when it's 1% here, 1% there. And it's easy to see that, and it's easy to feel it when you shoot. So yeah, this is it. It's called the A5 CK. This is what it looks like on the cap.
Nice
production version. And Voltor makes these for us. It's a collaboration with them. The downside, it's not a downside on the system. It's a downside on availability. So the one problem that I have is that, you know, you've got five different weights for this, from an H0 to an H4. And when you talk different calibers, different length barrels, different length gas systems, and you're going to change this weight, you have to be able to change the spring. And unfortunately, with this, it requires a rifle spring. And when it comes to a rifle spring, you've got either just a mil-spec spring, or like a Springco Green, and it's essentially the same tensions, same spring rates, or close enough to not make a difference. And so you can change everything except the spring. In my opinion, when you change one thing, you should look at least and have the ability to change everything. And while, you know, we could make different springs, and we will have different rifle springs coming shortly, to solve it up front. Sorry. Shouldn't have washed my hands earlier, 'cause they're slippery now. Okay. So in order when I started testing this, I went in on a Saturday morning and made some sleeves. And these are prototypes right now, but we've got some production ones coming. This little collar that allows you to press fit and snap into the buffer itself. And you know, it's got flats on it for the debris relief. But you just snap that in like that, and this is what the entire device looks like. It allows you to take any carbine spring and run a carbine spring with an A5 system. And you know, you look at carbine springs, you got Geissele Super 42, you've got, you know, five or six different springs from Springco. We've got our own springs as well. So it just gives you options to say, if I'm going to change the weight, I want to change the spring as well. And that goes into a lot of different areas. But the other thing is, what this also does, this Delrin, and it fills up enough of the gaps and spaces in there that it quiets down the system significantly. So you got more surface contact while still maintaining that tolerance back here. And that surface contact just creates a super smooth system.
So you on know, the website,
it's interesting can... that, go ahead, buddy.
Oh, so, no, I was just asking. So Aaron, is that when you're doing on the website, Build Your Blaster, is that options they can choose when they're doing that?
The collar is something that, you know, we've talked about. We've said that it's coming. It isn't available yet. We've been testing different materials and like the longevity of those materials. So this will be it'll be available soon, you know, within 30 to 45 days. But that's not available right now. When you order a gun, like a complete gun, it will come with the new buffer system right now.
Okay.
So it comes just with this, with a rifle spring, is, you know, and it's still tuned and it's still noticeable difference. It's just not the peak that you could get out of it yet.
Okay. So
now I was just going to say before that, you're right, those little incremental changes, and Rick and I harp on this all the time, you add those all up and it does make a huge difference. And we spoke to many manufacturers and we just don't see this type of continuous innovation and continuous attempts to make your product better. We just don't see it. And it's unbelievable. And I can see why Rick raves about the contact that he's had with Cobalt Kinetics.
It's been a good relationship. I've enjoyed becoming good friends with Rick and his input and his, you know, I'm someone who really likes feedback, but I don't like BS and I don't like someone telling me what they think I want to hear. I'd rather you just, I don't care. Like, I don't get offended. I'm a short former fat guy. Like I've got no ego and have zero ability to like get offended on that stuff. So, what I enjoy about Rick is that, it's not only honesty, it's raw honesty, and it's exactly how he feels every time. And he doesn't care how you take it. He's just going to give it to you. And that's what's needed. If someone's going to tell someone, you know, give me your feedback and I'm going to listen to you, like both sides have to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. And that's been in my experience anyway, in my feelings, that's been what's happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Aaron, you've been super receptive, right? So it's kind of like, hey, we're talking little things. So remember we were talking the handguard and you had, with the old one there was like a higher point. It wasn't a clear flush across the board. And I'm like, hey man, you've got a slight tilt point. If I hit it right here, right? What's the chances I'm going to hit it? You're like, no problem. You know, clean it out, make it straight. So, you know, that's just one of many examples. It's just like, super receptive. And again, for me to you, that says a lot for a company that's not going to sit there and buck. Or, you know, you hear this a lot of times. Well, the engineers say, well, okay, great engineer. I got what you're saying, but is it mechanically doing anything? You know, so it was one of those that, hey, if I had to put this thing on a flat surface, I got a tilt point. If I can remove it, why not? And you were like, yep, too easy. But you even took some things a little further. We're talking about, on the dust cover, you know, something that's unique with yours, and I don't think anybody else does it, but your dust cover pin actually entered in the receiver. And
yeah,
you know, for those of you that remember the old little C clamp that probably cost 1/100 of a cent or whatever to make, it was a potential fail point with that, because it'd be plenty of guys that over time that little C clip would pop off. And now you're sitting there, you know, the pin starts to back off some. Now you got dramas that you don't need. And it's things like that that truly impress me with what you guys are doing. Not as impressed as let's drag my roll 3.5 miles down the road.
Yeah. So I told you I have ADD. So
yeah,
that was,
yeah.
Yeah. It ended up emotionally, it took a toll afterwards, because I just grabbed an upper and a lower. I slapped them together and just said, I'm just going out and I'm going to beat the crap out of this thing. I drug it 3.5 miles down a gravel road, got out of the car, checked it. I like pulled it apart and made sure like there wasn't any rocks or anything that was going to die. And then put 60 rounds through it, like full lock back. It just ran. And then I'm like, okay, now what can I do? Yeah. So I threw it off a 180-foot cliff. Same thing, 60 rounds, no issues. And then I was like, you know what? It's running, but how does it, like, I'm going to test like beating up the handguard and stuff and putting it through its paces. How does it affect accuracy? Stuck an optic on, and we shot half minute groups. So I say we, I was like, I shot like a just barely sub MOA, but, one of my guys was there and he had better blood sugar that day and shot a half minute out of it. But then we take it like everywhere now. We've got about 1,000 rounds through it, haven't cleaned it, haven't lubed it, haven't done anything, and it just runs. Gassing's great. I don't mind testing stuff like that. But the emotional side is I had a prototype barrel in there from Roscoe, whose barrels we use. And afterwards I'm like, oh crap. Like that was, like I could have chosen a different upper, but
right,
you know, it is what it is.
Run it through the gamuts, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we super appreciate your time, and we think the things that you're doing are just incredible. And the best of luck to you. If you ever want to come back on when you have a new release, just give us a holler, man. You're more than welcome to come back. Really appreciate everything awesome. You're doing and the time you took today.
No, absolutely. I appreciate you guys. This was fun. I love talking about it. And yeah, we will definitely have, we have a lot of stuff coming. We're probably going to take a little bit of a break and let what we have mature a little bit. But yeah, we have more stuff.
So the best place to get a hold of you, you said, was either the website with the phone number or your IG handle.
Yeah. Cobalt at Cobalt Kinetics on Instagram. Reach out. Seriously, we love talking to people. And if you reach out to me one time, I'm probably going to give you my cell phone and let you text me or call me. So just don't be weird and talk all the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, don't hang up, buddy. We're going to get back with you after the show's in, but really appreciate you being here today, pal.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome, Aaron.
Thanks.
Yeah, man.
Great show, buddy. Good questions, man. They're doing a lot of great things, and you know, having seen the rifle that he made for you, it's just unbelievable. So,
yeah, and
good on them.
The part that the part that impresses me, Mark, is, you know, the whole 1% better every day. It's not lip service with those guys. You know, they're out there doing it. It's like, hey, man, what can we do to make this thing better? So, you know, guys, I would tell you this: go check out Cobalt Kinetics. You know, go build you a blaster. You got to love it.
That's right. Build a blaster. I love it.
That's it, man. And you guys won't be disappointed. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. While you guys are on the interwebs, make sure you check out warhog.com and kellydefense.com. Make sure you click on the OTR training on demand. Mm-hmm. It's your one-stop shop for your video training catalog. You can also go to patreon.com/onTheRange podcast. There you can support the show and hang out with a bunch of great guys and gals in the OTR Patreon group. We have 2 Zoom calls a month. Like Rick likes to say, we solve all the world's problems.
Solve them
twice
all.
A week.
Twice a month.
Twice a week. But you know, make sure you sign up for those email and those newsletters on the websites. Yep. Go check those out. You go to the websites, you can watch all the past episodes of On the Range podcast, Warhog Words Wisdom, catch up with the Duco project, see what they got going on, what events and how you can donate directly on Rick's site. There's a lot of things you can do. Just go check them out and sign up.
Yeah, buddy. And don't forget, guys, last but not least, whatever platform you're listening to, please hit that subscribe button, that leave us a rating review. We've got to beat the old AI algorithm. And the only way we can do that is with your support. So, you know, again, the old adage, coming to you live from 5th and Main, is there's some AI suppression going on. So help us out and just bump those numbers up.
Yeah, man, that AI is a freaking savage, bro.
Beast.
Savage. Yeah. All right, Rick, let's do it again real soon, pal.
You know it, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys. Be safe out there.
See ya.